Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
It's Tuesday, it's 1230, and it's time for Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. Our guests and topics today will include, right now, Lydia Francis and Kermit Kahm, board members of the Paso Robles Food Co-op. We're going to talk about co-ops, understand how they work, and see how you can get involved as an owner in the community. Talk about the mission of the food co-op and also the health benefits of eating locally sourced, unprocessed foods. Kermit and Lydia, welcome to Protecting What Matters.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having us today.
All right. You got to speak into the microphone. Sorry. And at 1 o'clock, we have Edward Ring, who's the Director of Water and Energy Policy at the California Policy Center. We're going to talk about the changing landscape of energy in the United States, the numbers driving California versus Washington on energy, water, and forestry policy, and ask the question, will Gavin Newsom and the Democrat legislature succeed in thwarting the Make America Great Energy policy? Call in with questions or comments. 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So before we get started, I just want to mention, last week we had John Pichong on the show, and we were talking about, one of the many things we talked about was the upcoming Christmas party for the San Luis Obispo County Lincoln Club. That's happening on the 12th, and John, Thursday the 12th, at the Madonna Inn in San Luis Obispo. It's a great event. Tony Strickland, who's a former state senator, and I think he's going to be a state senator again, is going to be the keynote speaker. And John wanted me to let you know that there are still some tickets available. They're going quickly. The deadline is Thursday. You can text him or call him at 805-440-7818 and reserve your tickets and get your seats taken care of. All right, Lydia and Kermit. So tell us a little bit about yourselves and why you got involved with the Paso Robles Food Co-op. Let's start with Lydia.
Thank you. I have lived in Paso for 24 years or so. I'm a veteran. My husband and I are involved in the American Legion here locally in Paso Robles. But we like food. We really like food a lot. I've always gardened. I've enjoyed gardening myself, and with my extra produce, I've always enjoyed sharing those things with others. I have been involved with and known about cooperatives since I was a teenager. So when I move to a new area, one of the first things that I do is I try to find the nearest cooperative. And so I found out that there was one in San Luis. I've been a member for quite a while. But honestly, going over the grade to do my weekly shopping is a bit much.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a search on the web, and I found that, what do you know, there's a cooperative in Paso Robles. I was sorry to say that it took me a good year to finally join. I went to a meeting. I found exciting people that really wanted good things for their community, and I've been a member ever since.
All right. Well, great. It's a great idea. Kermit, how about yourself?
Well, let's see. I've been in Paso since 2008, and I actually originally heard about the food co-op here on KPRL. There was an interview similar to this, and I went to the website, and I asked my wife, and we thought it was a good idea, and we garden, and we eat well, too. I think we eat better at home than eating out, and it's certainly a lot cheaper. We joined, and then it turned out, at that point, one of the driving members was kind of backing away from the co-op, and they needed some board members, and that's when Lydia and I got on the board, and we've been there ever since trying to carry it forward. So, and it's like I told you earlier, is we've doubled in size since I joined, and we just need to do that one more time, and then we'll get to our goal of 500.
Well, you're getting there, it seems. I'm a history guy, and so I looked up the history of cooperatives in the United States and really in Europe. I mean, they go back centuries. Mm-hmm. Give the audience a bit of that. Who wants to take that question?
Well, yeah, cooperatives are have a long history, and there's different types of co-ops. There's worker co-ops, and then there's, like, we're a member owner. It's not a requirement to work in our co-op. It's just you need to be a member to get the benefits. And essentially, it's a special carve-out in the IRS tax code where cooperatives, as long as they distribute, I think it's 85% of the profits to the members, then it's considered a nonprofit. And our whole goal is to get enough members here in Paso to basically guarantee our success. And that's what we're doing. So we're going about it a little different way than a normal business might start, where they say, hey, I got a great idea. Let's get some capital and do it. We're getting, hey, let's get our committed customers.
And you've been trying to get this up and running since, what, 2013, correct?
2013, there were 60 people in Paso Robles that said, oh, what a great idea. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could have, like, a farmer's market every day? And so that was the basic idea. And we've just been marching forward on that ever since.
So, and you've got, what, a little over 350 members now?
346.
That's right.
As of this morning.
Yeah, as of this morning.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing about it is that sometimes people indicate that they're interested, but to actually become an owner member, they have to also put their money forward, because that's where our capital comes from so that the store can open.
Now, we were talking before we went on the show. I mean, there is a food co-op down in SLO.
Correct.
And you're kind of the same, but you're not the same. Give us a little bit of picture of that for people that want to know the difference.
Okay, so every community is different. For instance, San Luis Obispo is mainly a college town, and that's the age demographics that you're going to have there, whereas Paso is a little different. We're more country, if you want to look at it that way. We have lots of farmers and ranchers and people that are interested in those types of things here. So every community is completely different. The demographics, the age groups, the income, all of those things are slightly different.
So if there was a food co-op here in Paso, I mean, we have how many farmers markets do we have during the week? I mean, it seems like there's almost a farmers market every day.
Here in Paso, I believe there are two.
And then you got Templeton
and then there's
Cambria.
Right. Okay. And so the problem with those is you don't know for sure who's going to be there until you get there.
Okay.
With a cooperative, you would know what's on the shelves. I mean, you could even call in and ask what's on the shelves if you're looking for something in particular. So it's like farmers market, but it's a little better. It's also better for the farmers or the producers, because in addition to them growing and producing all of their products, they also have to take time away from their families and their work to be able to go to farmers markets, carry all those products there, sell them or not sell them, then bring them home or dispose of them in some way. A lot of the smaller producers can't put their products in large stores like Albertsons, etc., because they want hundreds of pounds of whatever the product is, whereas a cooperative can take a few hundred pounds of this or a few hundred pounds of that.
Did you have something to say, Kurt?
No. The biggest thing with the cooperative is it's a store. It'll have hours. People will know when it's open. And the member owners then will have a say in what we carry. And that then, you know, basically, because it's a much more smaller community-oriented approach that, right? I mean, if you go to Albertsons, like, I just went there the other day, and their plastic bags changed. They're compostable now, but they're awful. and the point is our members, you know, will be able to drive the path to, you know, caring what the community wants.
How do you, I mean, if you're sourcing produce, let's just say, from local farmers and ranchers, or farmers in this case, because produce, I mean, how do you know that it's naturally grown and organically grown and all that? I mean, what's the check on that?
So one of the good things I think about it being a small community area is that you know the farmer. You know whether they have their licensing and their certifications, which are important, and they're there for our health benefits. In the larger stores, you're taking the word that that's the case, but unfortunately, you see article after article about something that has been imported from somewhere else in the world, It's been on a ship for however many months. It might or might not have been organic when it left there, mm-hmm. but the outgassing and the other types of things that happened to it along the way, do you really want to trust that and the health and safety of your family? I mean, yeah. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So I mean, when you get open, there's like a quality control process.
There is,
what does that look like?
Well, it's. I mean, obviously, we're going to have to follow whatever rules and regulations that we will be required to do. I mean, in some ways, that's a little bit ahead of where we're at because we would have to have some sort of store manager with the experience to do it. Neither Lydia or I are that person, and so it's difficult to answer specifically. But in general, is it's going to be a matter of, you know, finding the producers that want to deal with us, making sure that it meets whatever criteria, making sure it's labeled properly or you know, packaged or identified as it's supposed to be. So that really is going to be the store manager's job.
Okay. And so right now you're 346 members, but you do have a board. Who else is on the board?
Jack Reed is on our board. Cindy McDonald is on our board. Carol Raddick is on our board.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And how often do you meet?
Well, we have a monthly meeting, but mm-hmm. it's not necessarily all the board members.
Okay.
Kermit and I meet monthly because we're attending the monthly meetings every month.
And it's open to members?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, and yeah. The public. The public
yeah.
is welcome.
Yeah, these are open monthly meetings. We typically have them the fourth Wednesday of every month.
Okay.
And we're a little out of sync because Christmas is right around
yeah.
there.
Right.
So we're going to skip December. But yeah, every fourth Wednesday, it's on our website on the calendar. And it's open to anybody that's interested. Again, it's four members. Once a year, we're required to have an annual member meeting. And we just had that in, what was it, October?
October,
yeah.
Okay. So you have a number of what are on your website. You had a really nice website, actually. Did you do the website, Kermit?
No. I mean, I maintain it, and Lydia helps, too.
Okay. Anyway, tell us, you guys, you have a whole laundry list of what are referred to as supportive businesses. Mm-hmm. Tell us about some of the most active members there and how they're helping to get you launched.
Well, a lot of the members that produce things, like say Bee Wench Farms, or there's ranchers and things like that, they want to be part of it because they eventually want to get their, you know, produce or whatever mm-hmm. into the store. But in terms of right now, it's just a matter of promoting it and letting people know that, you know, the co-op exists. And I'm not sure if you have other thoughts.
Yeah, we promote their businesses through our social media.
Mm-hmm.
We also have what we call a local bites.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, we've done it every quarter or even every month. And the way that works is that one of our existing local producers may host us.
Mm-hmm.
They'll tell people why they are happy to be part of the Paso Food Co-op. We might invite some of the other producers as well, like an olive oil producer or even a winery, or mm-hmm. depending on what it is. They'll also explain why the co-op is important to them. Then we do our little spiel about what the co-op is. We invite people to join in that way, and it's a lot of fun for everybody.
Well, good. And so, I mean, when's your next local bites? Have you got that on the calendar?
We actually have a brand new owner member that stepped up to become our event coordinator.
Okay.
And she's working on that right
and
now.
And who
she's
is that?
Really excited about it. Her name is Allie Reed.
Okay. What's her business? Let's give her a plug.
I don't remember what business that she's in. Mm-hmm. I think she's just recently retired. But anyway.
And so all the supportive businesses are really in the farm-to-table movement, really.
Absolutely. In fact, they're quite dedicated to it. One of our supportive businesses is Boniche Winery. It's woman-owned. She's a veteran, and she's also SIP certified, if you're not familiar with that.
What is that?
Sustainability in Practice.
Okay.
And so she uses minimal water, minimal herbicides, minimal any kind of things that are not good for the soil. She uses rescue animals as her staff. Mm-hmm. So her weeders are goats, or their baby doll sheep, or their miniature donkeys.
Mm.
She has the little cooney pigs that also take care of a lot of stuff, feral cats that take care of, you know, rodents mm-hmm. and those types of things. So there's a lot of a love for the land and appreciation of what it is that they're doing and what they're putting into their products for a good number of our members.
Yeah, there are other members, too, that are maybe just they have a separate business that they just believe in the co-op. Yeah. So, I mean, not every one of those supportive businesses is in that farm-to-table. So just to clarify, mm-hmm. I mean, there's other people, like we have an acupuncturist and you know, other
bookkeepers.
Yeah. So it's basically members that already have businesses and they're supporting or they want the co-op to happen.
Okay. Yeah.
And so if a member joins, because the membership is for households, it's not a business membership, mm-hmm. but if they happen to have a business that's currently open, that's just one of the ways that the co-op helps them in the community and they help us in the community, is that we kind of scratch each other's backs.
Got it. Okay. And so if somebody just becomes a member of the co-op today or tomorrow, whatever it is, I mean, what are the member benefits that they would get now and the opportunities? And then what do you foresee in the future as you get this thing launched?
Well, the primary benefit right now is just that they're buying into our vision that they want the co-op to exist.
They own a business with their friends.
Yeah, they're a business owner. I mean, that's the key thing is technically this is a share in the business. So they are one of the founding members and they get to guide the co-op into the future and once it exists as a store. Once the store is open, then the members will decide what those benefits are. Dividends could be taken out. Profits could roll into expansion or adding on a deli or, you know, some other feature to the store. It just goes on and on. And that's, I guess, the key thing is as member owners, we all have one vote into what the organization does.
And so here's the thorny question. If I'm an owner, do I have a potential liability if the co-op doesn't make ends meet?
Well, no, it's a legal entity. It's okay. A corporation, meaning it's a share of a corporation. There's, you know, we have the bylaws and the you know, the articles and all that good stuff. Yeah. So it's a legal entity. We get to pay taxes even though we're not making a lot of money. You know, we're actually now profitable because we have enough invested in our bank that we're making enough to cover our raw expenses and the taxes. Mm-hmm. So that, to me, that was a big thing as a business owner. It's like, hey, we're making money now.
All right, good. And so do you have any plans coming up? We got a couple minutes left here in the segment, so do you have any plans at this point to jumpstart membership and get it going so you can launch?
We always have ideas. In October, it's actually National Cooperative Month, mm-hmm. and so we did a real push on our social media for that. And I believe my last count was 8 new members in October, mm-hmm. which we were pretty happy about.
Right. We always kind of thought, Lydia and I, once we broke past 250, which is halfway to our goal, it was all downhill because we figured, well, everyone just needs to get one more member. Well, it's improved a bit, but we're still waiting for that big breakthrough. But we steadily add members, and it's just a matter of people talking to people. I mean, I don't know how many applications Lydia has where they haven't paid or that kind of thing. Is it's just a matter of and that's a big question that people have, is like, well, what am I buying into and that kind of thing, and it sometimes it just takes time for people to realize that we're here, we're doing it, we're forming it, it's been going for a while, and it's going to happen. So it's just the way people work.
All right, so do you have some stuff planned for January and February as you move forward?
Yes, we do have things.
Did you mention those already, or did
I didn't, because I don't have exact dates and times. But as soon as we do, they'll be on our calendar on
okay.
our webpage.
Great.
And we'll promote it.
Tell us a little bit about what you're planning without a date. What kind of stuff you planning?
We've been talking about actually going and physically visiting all of our business members, and maybe doing some live introductions of, you know, this is the person that owns the business, this is the type of things that they do, this is what their farm looks like if it's a farm, this mm-hmm. is what their winery looks like if it's a winery, those types of things. Just some fun things to get to know people better. I think there's a lot of connections in our community that could be better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So you got this farm to table movement. I guess what comes to mind is you finally get open. Is there really enough organically grown food that is out there to supply you as well as all the farmers markets?
Oh, I think so. And okay. And even if it's not, if the farmers markets have to come to us for for some of our produce, we mm-hmm. wouldn't have a problem with
that. Yeah.
And it's also, it's a market, right? Meaning yeah. the market responds to demand.
There you go. All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk to Lydia and Kermit about how the co-op will fit into the nationally growing movement to have healthier diets for improved health. So stand by. Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Lydia Francis and Kermit Kahm about their efforts to launch the Paso Robles Food Co-op. Call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Lydia and Kermit, before we turn to our closing topic, healthy eating, please, which is probably something a lot of us didn't do over the Thanksgiving holiday, right? Please let our audience know how they can learn more about the Paso Robles Food Co-op and become members and get involved.
Well, the easiest place, of course, is just the website, which is pasofoodcooperative.com. So it's all together, no dashes or spaces, just pasofoodcooperative.com. And that will give you access to the bylaws, the how to join, the vision, where we're at, and also the calendar if you're interested in coming to a meeting, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, folks, visit. It's a worthwhile effort here, and it would be great to have a organic food co-op here.
Wonderful.
In yep. Paso. It really
and
would be.
We do have social media. We have a meetup page, we have a Facebook page, and we have an Instagram page.
Okay, great, great. So here's the final topic, and this is something we've talked about on the show here over the last year or so, and it's really, coming into the this is not a political topic, but because of the election, we have people like now Robert F. Kennedy Jr., RFKJ, as we like to call him, talking about healthier eating and healthier habits and all that type of stuff. I mean, I was watching some videos of him the other day, and I mean, this guy is built like, I don't know how he keeps himself that way, and it's horrible, actually. But anyway, the whole final topic here is eating healthier, less processed foods, lower sugar content to reduce insulin resistance and diabetes. This is just becoming a really hot topic in the longevity medical podcast and book world. Again, I heard another podcast just the other day by a Dr. Mark Hyman, he was interviewed, I can't remember which podcast that was, but his whole point was that the underlying cause of many types of diseases, including cancer, Alzheimer's, and heart disease, are caused by, this diabetes, basically. This is the underlying cause. So I think, the Paso Food Co-op could benefit from this movement. What are your thoughts in this regard?
Well, just simply that's why many of our member owners want the store to open is to have access to that. I mean, there's that joke about the healthiest way to shop at a grocery store is to walk around the perimeter and not go into the packaged or frozen foods. Obviously, we've evolved to live off the land, and that's changed as time has marched on with the processed foods, highly processed foods, additives. You just run into that with, and that's what the RFK Jr. is talking about, is that there's subsidies for corn, and then that creates the fructose and that gets high corn syrup, whatever it is. But it's no question that having access to locally grown fresh foods would be a healthy maneuver for the community.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we hope to have in addition to those healthy foods is we hope to have space to have places for workshops so that people can learn how to eat mm-hmm. better, whether it's preparing the foods or growing the foods or whatever it is. Learn a lot of the old things that our grandmothers used to know.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I was, I have a friend who's my age, and he was just diagnosed with colon and liver cancer, unfortunately. And one of the things that Mark Hyman who's a doctor, and again, it was a great folks, I'll be happy to share any of these podcasts with you if you're interested in it, but his point was that anybody with that disease process should just go into a keto diet. I mean, absolutely, the no sugar stuff, mm-hmm. Because it really, that feeds the right. cancer. Mm-hmm. So
well, our bodies do crave salt mm-hmm. and sugar mm-hmm. and fat. The problem is that when you overprocess foods, the concentrations are entirely too much.
Mm-hmm.
And the difficult thing is that because it tastes good, mm-hmm. we want more of it. And just because we want more of it doesn't necessarily mean that it's good for us.
Well, one of the things, too, you know, that is, you know, I heard President Biden, I'll still try to be respectful here, you know, he wants to now have Medicare pay for these drugs, the Wegovy kind of stuff.
No, the weight loss
drugs. And I mean, and on the one hand, I mean, I can see it's probably less expensive to, I saw, Lydia, you're right. But, well, and again, I'll make a comment about that in a minute, but, you know, it's obvious that if you can keep people from being overweight, then they'll avoid the chronic illnesses that end up costing more to treat than the drug potentially. I mean, I get that process. But what Lydia did while we started this conversation was, you know, and they say it in every commercial, you know, even with this stuff, you have to diet and exercise, right? You have to stop eating so much and you got to exercise. So even with these drugs, and we don't know, and then we don't know what unknown consequences of these drugs, right. You know, so.
Yeah. And again, it does take discipline for people to get on a healthy diet. But it is always funny. You know, I remember talking to my son when he's kind of struggled a little bit with weight and he's learned how to count calories and stuff. But anyways, it's like I said, you know what? When you're hungry, everything tastes good. And
right.
So if you constantly try to satiate your, you know, like Lydia was saying, with salt or sugar and stuff like that, you tend to overeat. You don't watch your portions. And then it just turns into, you know, overweight.
Well, yeah. And I mean, if you had met me 5 or 6 years ago, I was 60 pounds heavier than I am now. And you're right. You're right, Lydia. I mean, I'm not trying to be holier than thou, believe me, because I was fat most of my life, you know, way overweight as a kid and everything like that. And I'd go up and down in diets and this. And finally, I had some issues, health issues. And I just said, I got to stop doing this. And it's a matter of eating differently and changing your habits. And everybody is different.
Yeah.
For me, I happen to thrive on the high protein, low carb diet. But a lot of it, so I don't really, I mean, after a couple of days of eating leftovers from Thanksgiving, it was like, I've really had enough of this stuff. It was great. Well, listen, thank you both for coming into the studio. Give the website address again.
Yeah, it's PassoFoodCooperative.com. And yeah, thank you for having us today.
Well, and good luck, and we'll get an update sometime next year on your progress. Okay,
that'd be great.
All right, thanks so much, folks. I'll be back.